A caller says, why are the media following the lead of the chattering classes and their obsession on the trans issue? What about the other huge issues affecting our youth, like homelessness, unsurpassed youth mental health and suicide rates, massive student debts and emigration of our young talent, all far down the list of government priorities compared to LGBT issues? Seems this country is on a fast track to self-afflicted ruin. Well, we discuss all of those issues far more than we do the LGBT issue on this programme. Children don't need this teaching, creating more confusion into their tender lives, and I'm horrified that this is going to be taught. Again, please make sure, though, of the language that's going to be used before you're horrified. Particularly in national schools, it's good to have all the info. What is happening to school ethos and freedom of religious teaching in this country? It's being annihilated. Our constitutional rights are being ignored, denied and discredited by unproven ideologies. Another, I think there's too much emphasis on gender identity in primary schools. I think it puts doubts in pupils' minds. Okay, that's a selection of the views there. We'll get back to more of those as the morning wears on. But we're joined on the programme now by Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. Company, Letterkenny and Remelton. Good morning, Seamus. Great to see you.
Nice to see you, Greg. How are things?
Brilliant. All the better for having you on the show. Before we get into questions, I've kind of lost track of the legal woes of President Donald Trump. What's your take on what's going on at the moment?
Yeah, it's difficult to keep up with it. I think what's quite fascinating, though, Greg, from watching it and just observing at times seeing CNN, that Donald Trump, whether we like it or not, seems to be the only news in the USA. And for maybe going forward and his plans for another term, he's keeping Joe Biden very much in the background. And the method, well, it's certainly unorthodox. He's facing multiple charges. I think the cumulative sum comes to about 91 in multiple different states over the last 4 months, one nearly every month. And that has all been very well ventilated. But what I find just fascinating by it is the way that he has monopolized the media, the way in which it has been portrayed. He is going and turning up to face these charges in presidential cavalcade. And he certainly has galvanized his own support. Now, whether that's going to be enough to ultimately get him over the line in November, 12 months, well, that's yet to be played out. And I have my doubts about it. And against that, then, I think that while he's facing all these woes, he is still going to be in the public domain for that entire period, and he is going to be the only show in town. Does that damage Biden? Maybe. It's hard to say, but will it get Trump over the line? And it's absolutely essential, because the woes that he's facing on the legal front are to such an extent that if they don't, well, the future could be fairly bleak. So there's an awful lot at stake. But I think if you were looking as an outsider, you would like to see somebody new and maybe fresh coming on the scene. And if the Republicans were looking at this, maybe that's the avenue they should be taking. That when Trump has galvanized his support, if he could see his way to then stepping aside and bringing on a younger candidate and handing that type of support over to them, that they could then garner some of the middle ground that he's not going to garner because of all his legal woes. And I just don't think...
I just don't think he's the voters. I can't see...
So if that could happen, yeah, you would still see the Republicans a little bit of chance. If it stays the way it is, Biden v. Trump, I think that... I just don't think that Trump can win it, because the middle ground won't be there.
I don't know. I mean, even in terms of PR and communication, even the mugshot, he used the mugshot as an electioneering tool, very clearly, staring in the camera in the way that he did. I just don't see him having the character to use his platform to bring someone else through. I don't think he cares about the Republicans. I think it's Donald Trump and that's it. But that will all play out. As a person of the law, though...
Yeah, just on the mugshot, Greg, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned it, because back to the point that I've raised initially, that that raised millions for his, on his for his supporters and into the, what we call the election kitty. So I mean, it worked from that point of view. Now I don't like it, and you know, I have great reservations about it, as you would have, and the manner in which it is used, certainly. But from his point of view, it's all part of the same agenda. So it is, and it is playing out. And to some degree, while we don't like it and we have serious reservations about the future if this was to continue, it is bringing him nearer the mark where he's getting towards the 50%. Mm-hmm. But that's the middle ground that he has to then, he has to get some support from. And this type of activity, I don't think will do that. And I agree with you that he's not likely to be looking for some younger. But if you're thinking about an ex-Republican premier or president of the country, that's the only avenue. I think that's the only game in town. But on the other side of that, if we flip the coin and we look at Biden, and he hasn't brought on, like, there was a succession plan, I thought, for Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I thought that was it.
Which seems to be just gone into the ether completely. Mm-hmm. And seemed a very worthy candidate. And I thought the plan was that after he'd done a term, that she would become more prominent and maybe be facing into this term as their candidate. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to have happened either. So I think in America, there might be, if we really go back in history and you look back in the early 60s, when you've seen a very young JFK being elected the youngest ever, it's at a time Americans need something fresh. Mm. Think of Clinton when he came in. Think of Obama when he came in. So we're nearly at that stage now, given that these two guys have served their terms. They both have a bit of baggage. Obviously, Trump has an awful lot. And Biden, there'll be a big case about the economy and all the rest of it. And so there'll be a big play out there. And it's just getting a bit closer. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the manner in which it's been done, but it certainly the sides are coming closer.
Just before we move on, just to a question, as a person, now things are very different in this country as they are compared to the United States, but as a person of law, I mean, you can't dispute, can you, that the courts are being politicised, they're being used to try and damage Trump. I don't think it's working. And we don't see the same sort of scrutiny on the other side of the house. Does that concern you that something as important as the courts, the law, the judiciary are being used as political tools?
Well, I think we once touched on this before, and like one of them, I think that it's all very serious matters that he is now facing. But like I think that the one that for me is the one that I don't think there's any political emphasis or influence on at all, is the four counts in relation to the Washington conspiracy, because there have been hundreds already prosecuted in relation to that. And I don't think that is politically motivated at all. I think that you've seen or you've heard this week, even just hot off the press this morning, I think one of the leaders of the Proud Boys got 17 years in respect of that. So that charge against him was not politically motivated. So I don't think you can say that's the political system using that against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. The question is, did he incite or did he conspire? Did he contribute to what happened that particular day in January 6, 21? And also, and don't lose sight of this, that five people either lost their lives then or just subsequently to then as a result of that. So I don't see that as being anything to do with politics at all. I think that you have to face the law and face the charges that are there and that hundreds of others have faced. And as I said, there's been sentences of 17, 18 years handed down so far. And the prosecutors were even disappointed with that because they were looking for 33 years. Hardly politics.
Okay. I bought a house with a half-acre piece of land behind it, which is 1.5 acres on a site. One of the other owners has placed an electric wire to an outhouse on his site, but this wire is running along my hedge. It's a dangerous low-lying wire with high voltage. I've been on to Gardaí, the ESB and the council, all who say it's not their responsibility. So whose responsibility is it and how do I go about getting it removed, as the owner says he has no intention of removing it?
Well, I was going to suggest, firstly, that the first port of call is some discourse, and if that is not working, well, then he's probably going to have to go down a legal route and get in touch with his legal advisors to see where he stands. The first step I would see on it is really to get a full survey done to determine exactly the location as to which property it's on, if it is definitely on this owner's property, and then is it creating what we could call a hazard? And that may give rise to an action in trespass. It could also give rise to a title action if there's some dispute as to how long it has been there, whether the other person who's been using it has some right to it by way of an easement or otherwise. Usually overhanging wires are the responsibility of the ESB, while those around one's house and in one's house are the owner's responsibility. But I think a full survey, and then armed with that, it sounds to me like there's going to be not much alternative but to start the process rolling. And it looks like if it can be is assessed as a hazard, there could be health and safety issues in it. And then you're talking maybe about a circuit court action. And that would not be an expensive route to have to go down. So it's one that I think would be sensible at this juncture to look at that, look at the cost implications that are involved, and maybe get back to some discourse with the neighbour. Because remember, once this if it does degenerate into litigation, that polarises people forevermore, amen, and they still probably have to live next door to each other.
It is a civil matter.
It's a civil matter, yes.
Okay.
Yes. It would be a civil matter. I would anticipate maybe a type of an action and trespass in the circuit court, and maybe a title action. It could look for if it was creating excessive risk to the people that around the area, to his family members. He could be talking about looking for an injunction. But if that hasn't happened yet and it's been there a number of years, I don't really see that on the agenda.
A few years ago, my mother and father died. They both had the will all done early, and we all knew where we stood. My mother died first. Then a few years later, my father died. But what we didn't know until 1 year after my father had passed away is that one of the family had taken him to a solicitor and the will was rewritten. Can anything be done about this? We asked all other solicitors, but no one wants to take us on.
Well, I mean, they're going to need legal representation. There's an allegation being made there that an individual has been brought along and arrangements been made. But I would have to say that if a will has been executed, it would be usual, if there was any doubt at all about the capacity of the individual, for the person taking the instructions to get a doctor's certificate that they had capacity. So that's usually the first premise you would work on if you're taking instructions. So be careful about what you say and what you might think is a situation if it cannot stand up in a court of law. The point about people taking the matter on, that's entirely up to themselves as to whom they engage or whether people are prepared to act in such circumstances or take such an action. But you are talking about a challenge to a will, and it seems to me that the implication from the way the letter or the way the query has been phrased is that it's on the basis of the testamentary capacity of the individual who made the arrangements in the first place. They do say they took them to a law office, and so I would from the outset be saying, well, it's likely that if they took them to see a firm of solicitors who deal in this day in, day out, that if there was any doubt about the individual's capacity, that should be checked out beforehand and the appropriate certificate obtained from the doctor, and then proceed with the instructions. If it's a case where the individuals are disappointed that one of the parents laterally changed their arrangements, that's life, unfortunately. And if that's all there is to it, they could spend an awful lot of money going through litigation with not a very good result. So they want to have solid grounds to go on in the first instance.
Seamus, what can be done in a case where the solicitor of a person selling a property is simply not moving the transaction along at all? I am the purchaser. The case is taking over a year and there doesn't seem to be any good reason.
Well, that's a matter between the representation that the vendor will have and the purchaser will have. So the purchaser has let's assume they've signed a contract. They haven't said that, by the way. So if there isn't a contract signed, there's nothing binding at the moment, and the matter could be rescinded and not proceed at all. So they haven't indicated. I'm assuming that maybe if there is a contract, there could be an issue. There can be an issue with maps, there could be an issue with title, there could be an issue with charges, mortgages, all types of matters can arise and have to be dealt with before the sale is closed. But it is one that is for dialogue between the representatives of each of the parties. I'm not going to make a call as to what or why there is a delay of 12 months. But their solicitor should be in a position, I would expect, to be able to explain to them what the issues are arising at present. This is on the assumption that there is already a contract. And if there is no contract, well, at this stage, they don't have any real footing in the matter, because you need a legally binding contract before then you're proceeding with what's called requisitions on title. And that's where issues can arise, and sometimes do, and can give rise to a delay. But it should be easily enough explained as to what the position is. So it's really up to the caller to contact their representation. They have no privity with the person that's selling it or their representation. So their own solicitor should be in a position to access that information for them.
All right. What's the story if you want to leave your farm to a trust fund so that it cannot be later sold?
Yeah, gosh. Well, the story is, first of all, I would get some, and I think it would be well advised to get some advice from a firm of accountants. And maybe it would be worth thinking about a firm that deal particularly in trusts. There will, I would expect, be tax implications for the setting up of the trust in the first instance, and then there could then be tax implications going forward, depending on what the settlor wants to do in respect of the trust. The point, though, that they make, which at the very outset, is that it seems that they want to restrict in some way what happens to their property in the future. And that would cause me a little bit of concern, because that can't be done for an indefinite period of time. Otherwise, it offends against a very old and ancient rule called the rule of perpetuities, which means that you can't make a settlement or set up a trust beyond the lives of the parties that are living plus 21 years. So that is sort of in order to restrict people trying to put a hold on property and land way into the future, forevermore, amen. That was introduced, maybe about the 17th or 18th century, subject to correction, but it still stands in common law, and you'd want to be careful and alert to that if they're considering that. And I would also strongly recommend some tax advice.
All right. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, with offices and premises in Letterkenny and Remelton, and also online, Seamus.
Yes, I hope so, Greg. Yeah, we're still online. Yeah, gunn.ie or donegalslisters.ie. We hope to be able to help you.
Thank you so much for your time, Seamus. Look forward to chatting to you again soon. That's Seamus Gunn, as I mentioned there. Okay, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. A caller says, I'm beginning to think yous aren't right in the head at all if yous are going to allow a three-year-old to dictate to yous what about all their wee imaginary friends. He's going to tell us now that they are real. Well, it's me that brought that element of the conversation to the fore. And I'm just trying to make sure everyone is... go through the documentation themselves. Maybe it's something we could link so people know what's going on. A caller says that we need to try and be more open-minded of people who are going through feelings of being in the wrong body. How can we speak from a place of knowledge without ever having experienced this? Indeed, exactly. And that also requires more analysis and an understanding to make sure these people are seen, they're respected and they're supported. This topic is too confusing for young children. Let children be children. Why not teach this to parents, classes in the schools, before it's unleashed on innocent children? As I say, the terminology is pretty vague. It's like the majority of people will feel that they are a boy or a girl, but some people may not feel that, and they're advised then in fifth and sixth class to speak to a teacher or an adult. It doesn't go into any specific detail in national school. A caller says, Greg, what is your independence? Why in this world should a three-year-old know about gender? It's ridiculous. Greg, where is your independence? Again, it beggars belief. I'm trying to bring all of the information that's out there and all of the information that is being used to formulate this. I haven't adopted a position. I am literally trying to have more of an actual conversation about what is being taught, because people think stuff that's being taught is not being taught at all, and stuff that's not being taught is being taught. And then, of course, there's the reasons as to the psychological and scientific reasons that are being used to make these decisions. How in God's name, from that, can you question my independence when, as far as I'm aware, I'm the only person that I've heard in the media actually talking about the curriculum and where it's going, so that everyone knows what they're talking about and can have an informed view. But I appreciate your criticism. I accept what you have to say. Right, okay. Now, the HSC has issued a letter which reads as follows. I can't read it all. I'm writing to you in respect of the Inishowen Donegal Children's Disability Network team and its service to your child or children. Over the last 12 months, the Children's Disability Network team has been experiencing significant challenges in terms of recruitment and vacancies in the Inishowen area. Despite actively engaging with human resources and having their full support, we've been unable to recruit additional staff to fill these existing vacancies at this time. Unfortunately, these difficulties have become further compounded with additional vacancies and leave over the last few months. As a result, the CDNT will have no physiotherapist, social worker, social care worker in post come August 31st. In addition, the CDNT are experiencing significant challenges in respect of speech therapy, occupation therapy and psychology services. In response, we have to prioritise only those children with the highest degree of complexity for each of these therapies. Now, they say they appreciate that this is very concerning to you as parents, but it is a very difficult situation for parents. It goes beyond that. I want to say good morning first to Katrina. Katrina, I mean, this letter coming out, what is your situation and what are the implications of this for you and your family?
Hi, Greg. Listen, the letter is the letter. They stated what issues they have. My job now is, right, I am one of the lucky ones, Greg. I have my diagnosis for my wee boy. There is mammies out there that start in this journey that don't have a diagnosis. I started my journey 2 years ago today. Ben started school on Wednesday. And, like, it's hard. It's a hard journey. I'm not saying it's not hard. It is hard. But once you get into these services, they are amazing. Like, you just, it's like I have written down here, right? Ben is Ben. That is the end all. Ben is Ben. Ben will never be defined by autism. It's a word. My child is so much more than that word. Like, when we got in, we started speech. Ben doesn't talk. I am his voice. And I will always be his voice until he gets his voice. Like, there's so much support. When you get in, you get the support. But what I'm saying now is there is families out there that is not going to be able to avail of this support when there's no staff. So my question, Greg, is who's going to sort this? What can be done? When is it going to happen? Because the longer this goes on, Greg, the longer these families are going to have no help.
And what I have in front of me, which is unbelievable, Katrina, is the exact same letter, but instead of the Inishowen Donegal Children's Disability Network team, it's the East Donegal Children's Disability Network team. Now, I'm not sure if other areas, and maybe we'll find out as
it's
we go through this,
Greg,
piece,
it's
but
everywhere.
it's the exact same letter. So this is, well, I mean, there are some slight adjustments, but this is obviously now a county-wide issue.
Yeah. So Buncrana have a state-of-the-art facility up there. They are amazing, but you need to get in. So my question is, who's going to help this? What can be done? When's it going to happen? Because 2 years, we were attending them. We got Ben's diagnosis in April.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see that's the time scale. That's the time scale. Now, that's what's good. That's what the people there to help. That's what staff there to help. That's what they're there to do. These people that are starting their journey or maybe are in the journey do not have this. Like, you need a diagnosis before you can attend school to get extra help.
Yeah.
You need a diagnosis to get the financial system, but to get the help. Like, I had never not worked, Greg, from I was 11 until I moved. I'm in the show in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years passed. And it was my first time not having a job. And I always loved my work. But Katrina had to realise, work's changing. Ben is now. My children are my work. And I do my work to the highest standard.
Mm-hmm.
Always have, always will.
And you say that this isn't necessarily about thinking of different ways to recruit people. You say that this is about the state of the country, the cost of living crisis, the amount of pay. You are saying, right, enough is enough. You see, we are in an absolute, I don't think a lot of people realise, but in certain areas of society, many areas, we are in an absolute crisis with particularly in how we are treating and looking after and caring for our children. And this is a very particular area of that. This is a crisis.
It's Greg, I would have kept in contact with a lot of my friends and family in Solcara. Right? I have a friend that has two skilled children that have just qualified in occupational therapy and speech and language. They have qualified. But what's keeping them here? The cost of living is too high. They can't buy a house. You get the skills, but then, boom, there's another thing blocking, not everybody has that financial,
Yeah, stay there, Katrina, if you don't mind. I want to bring in a person who received that letter, pretty much the exact same letter, but in respect to the East Donegal Children's Disability Network team. And it seems that the actual teams are not the issue here. It's the amount of people that they have because they're seemingly doing the best that they can. Michelle, what does this mean to you? You say in an email to us that you're heartbroken. So, and I'm so sorry that you're going through this. I really, really am. What's your situation, Michelle, and what does it mean, this letter coming to you?
I had the little girl, Fia, 2 years ago when she was born with Down syndrome. So initially it was a total shock. But after that then, we early intervention team came in. But we have never, ever seen a speech therapist, which supposedly you're meant to see from around 8 months for to help with eating and movement of the mouth and all. We've never seen an OT. We did have physio up to about a month ago, and that's all gone. So as a parent, now I have to actually train myself in speech therapy, physiotherapy. They do send webinars, to parents, that's not help. We need one-to-one. Sometimes I feel like crying, but I just don't feel that the support's out there for us.
No, we listen. All of us and want, I know that, us I know want there our best is, for like, our children. I was going to say there, and it can go on, but all of us want our best for our children, Michelle. But mm-hmm. time is of the essence too, and the right interventions at the right time. Other children in similar situations are getting them elsewhere, but just simply because you live in Donegal or East Donegal, your child is not getting the help they need, and you can't do nothing or anything other than what we're doing now. It is heartbreaking. It's so, so frustrating.
It is, because you feel like you're letting your children down.
But you're not, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah. But early intervention is key for our kids too. If they don't get it early, they're not going to walk. They're not going to talk. We can do so much at a home, but we need the support. We need the one-to-one help and the guidance and all the other support that comes with that. It's just and I've only been in this situation for 2 years. I have friends and family out there with autism, cerebral palsy, multiple other issues, and they are lost as well. And it's not fair. It is really not fair, because we really need that early intervention, because we want our kids to be the best that they can be.
Early intervention is key. Early intervention is key. And I cannot hide it this any higher. The earlier it's picked up on, the earlier you get the help, the more you're going to get out of it. There's courses. Once you get in, there's courses they facilitate that helps you. There's the Hannon program. There's the Early Bird program. These are there to help. And it's Greg, I'm still on my journey, and I'll be on my journey until I don't know when. Mm. But early intervention is key. Getting that help early is key. The longer that you delay, the more delay you're going to be faced with.
Yeah, Katrina, I get you. But Michelle, are we edging towards the new norm then? Parents are really busy. We know all of the stresses that we have in this country at the moment. I mean, can parents and guardians and caregivers really take on these professional roles of OT and speech therapy through webinars? And if they get away with it, I just wonder, is this going to be the new norm? By the way, this is all your job now. Here's the webinars. It's crazy, Michelle.
That's so crazy because, like, these people have, like, been doing this for years and years. Like, speech therapy is not something you can pick up over a webinar or physiotherapy, and you need to be shown and guided. You can't, like, you need physical hands on the child's body to help you know what way to move it, to help you know, like, it's something you can't do over a webinar. And the 12 months, they're saying this has been going on for the last 12 months. In my world, this has been going on for 2 years. It's been, and people that I've talked to, it's been going on for previous to this. They've actually have never got speech therapy before this. So it's not a new thing either. It's not the last 12 months. Like, this has been going on for years, and we don't have years. This is what's upsetting me. I don't have years for Thea. Early intervention is key. I want her to be able to talk when she goes to play school in a year's time. Well, that's my hope, my plan, my hope. But that's all on me now with no training. Do you know what I mean? That's what you're saying. Am I able to do that? I'll try my best. But it's not as good as a professional, I presume.
Of course, but Michelle, we aren't. I mean, we have our limits as well as to what we can deal with in life, as to what we can actually cope with as well. I mean, all of us have breaking points. Do you know that's a huge responsibility to be placing on someone's shoulders. Kathy's with us as well. You're affected by the letter sent from Inishowen, and there's something coming through, Kathy, from you and everyone who's affected by this, and it's cry for help, it's desperation, and nothing in terms of weakness, but we all want what's best for our children. But when you get a letter like that to say, I'm afraid, nothing we can do, like, we have to try and, you know, it's a desperate situation, Kathy, and good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Good morning to you too. We are desperate at this stage, Greg. It's awful. It's sad for our kids, you know. Any parent wants the best start for their child in life. That's all we want. And some kids need help with that. And my little boy, Riley, he's 3. He needs help with that. So we need all the help we can get. But it's just the staff are not there to help us. Riley's 3 and he's not talking. He has loads. Sorry, Greg. It is upsetting. Riley's 3. He's not talking yet. Now he has loads of words. He's making good progress. But we need speech therapy to get Riley talking. And we're looking at minimum 2 years. That would make Riley 5. You know, I want Riley to talk. That's all I want for Riley. Riley's such a happy boy. But I want him to be able to talk to me. So we need speech therapy at least, Greg. You know, we need help. Somebody needs to help.
And you know, Kathy, that this is now where the most benefit and progress will be made. And you want to be able to send him. You want to be able to speak with him, but you also want him to send him into school where he's as close to the level with speech and what have you as everybody else. That's what you want for your young person. Yes. But you're being told nothing for at least 2 years. And I think we all know that nothing's going to be there in 2 years because they're still dealing with backlogs from COVID. So, you know,
it's so
2 years
is... The timeline is so vague. We don't know. Will we get it in 2 years? It's an awful long wait. You know, if you can go private, that's great. But not every family can go private for these therapies, Greg.
All right, well, how about this? Let's get that $16 billion that we're saving for a rainy day. Let's pay for the private. Let's. I know it's not a solution, right? And I know we do that in the acute healthcare setting and it's not ideal. But this is really important. Time is the essence. Can the government then not start financing and availing of private services? If that's what it takes, as I say, we should be investing in public services, don't get me wrong, but this is desperate times and we've pulled out desperate measures in the past. Something needs to be done, Kathy, because you, Michelle, and Katrina's situation is slightly different, but she knows more than anyone the importance of this. You're only the voice of thousands of people across the Northwest today.
Yeah, I'm sure, Greg. Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty in our shoes. There's a lot of us needing help. You know, somebody out there has to be able to do something. The politicians, the councillors, you know, we're begging, Greg, at this stage. We are begging for help for our kids. We really are.
Right, okay. Well, I don't know if this... I mean, this is maybe this is the start of something. I know in the background, yous are already contacting councillors and TDs. This is part of it going public, but something else has to happen next. I don't want this to be Friday morning, you know, about 10:30, and then that's it. We have to come back to this next week. We have to try and put questions, and we're going to make representations to the ministers responsible. I don't want yous to think that this is the end of it now because you spoke to us today. We have to organise and do something that gets some sort of a resolution to this.
Yeah, we have to push for a change, for help.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Kathy, thanks. Michelle, did you want to add something?
No, I just wanted to say thanks for your time, and hopefully we'll get there.
We'll come back to this, though. This is just the first of our engagements. We're going to have to figure something out because there's no way people can live their lives like that, and there is no way our beautiful children, and with all their differences, that some are treated different to the other, and we certainly can't have a postcode lottery on these types of services for people. And Katrina, and you right from the get go recognise that you are a step ahead here, but that gives you the perfect position to talk about how important these services are and whatever it takes to get them to the people that need them. We need to be doing that, Katrina.
Yeah, 100%, Greg. The way I'm going to explain this, right, a mammy is like a kettle boiling on a fire or a stove. The mammy will whistle, the mammy will sing, and by Jesus, she will sing. But you remember, you always add the water when the kettle is boiling, to keep that steam going. Keep that singing. Keep it going. Because if you don't refill the water, mommies will boil dry. And this is it, Greg. This is the point we're getting out there. You may have a child. Maybe you have a child that's speaking. Maybe you have a child that's not walking. It's about keep going. Fight, and don't take no for an answer. Within reason. I know they're under pressure. And when you get in there, when you get into these services, they will help you. And they'll always help you. Like, I class them girls up in Bunkrana as my friends now because they helped me when nobody else could or would.
Okay.
And they helped.
All right.
I'm in a different that there. So, like, just keep singing, keep going. And, like, Greg, you never stop fighting for your child.
No.
Keep going.
And you'll do anything for them as well. Katrina, thanks for your time.
Yep.
Michelle, as I say, stay in contact with us. Keep us updated as to how things are moving. If you're organising a picket or anything like that, let us know, of course, and we'll let people know if they want to get on board with that. Kathy, same to you.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for listening.
I know this is the last thing that you want to do, but it's part of we have to do something. We can't just do nothing. And I know yous aren't doing nothing, but I know the last thing you want to do is be on the radio talking about it. Hopefully the right people are listening. Hopefully this is seen as the crisis that it is. And whatever it takes, something is done. Thank you all three of you. All right. Thanks to you all for texting in. I can safely, this is from Angela Turish, formerly of iCare. She says, I can safely, or maybe this isn't her, it's written underneath it. I can safely say it is, the whole text is her. Angela says, I can safely say in the 23 years iCare has been up and running, HSE services have dissipated and the journey is so much harder for families. It's soul destroying to hear that families just can't get the support they need. Things are definitely going backwards. It is high time that politicians started taking decisions to help people. We've a very poor political class who seem to be overruled by a powerful civil service answerable to nobody, interested only in box ticking rather than in helping people, and definitely not interested in problem fixing. And I said there's a bit of a air code lottery to this. Teresa on Facebook, hi Greg, I just want to say I have a granddaughter who is autistic. She lives in Wexford and the help she gets is unbelievable. She was diagnosed at 2 and is now talking and in mainstream school, albeit with an SNA. She has after school activities not only for her but for her older siblings as well. She has weekend breaks and so much help. It really is a postcode lottery and my heart goes out to those parents who can't get help. That's in from Teresa. Thanks, Teresa, for your kind comments. Lack of early intervention, planning and processes are key to so many terrible issues in Ireland in health, mental health, addiction, abuse, where the longer the problem persists, the more lifetime psychological problems persist. God help the mothers and fathers going through this crisis caused by ineffective government at all levels. Another, we aim for an inclusive society. Neglecting to provide early intervention is going to isolate our children from society and increase their need for health and support in future. And the key word there is our children, because those ladies' children are all of our children, and we should be treating them all equally and giving them all equal opportunity. And I think it's a collective responsibility for all of us to view it like that and not just have these mothers in this case in a desperate, desperate situation doing anything to make their lives better for their children and to give their children, who are perfectly capable of so much, to give them the opportunity to be that person that they can be. Yes, Greg, and you conclude, our young people who are being evicted by landlords so they can get €800 tax-free from the government. Our students can't find places this year either, and all down to the government lifting the ban on evictions. Would love if you could ask a politician, why are they doing this to our young people? The mental stress they have is at a dangerous level. They believe that if they don't do it, the problem will get worse. Parents aren't qualified. I've done all the webinars available. We received a letter saying there is no one or no OT available. It is ridiculous. Another, families are having to pay to access these basic services privately, and it's hugely costly. And I don't think public money going into the private services is the future, but something needs to be done in the interim whilst they review how to hire people. And so on it goes. We are going to return to that on Monday. Okay, I guarantee you that. If not Monday, Tuesday when I'm back. It depends. I don't know what Caroline has lined up for Monday, but certainly early next week, we're going to return to that story. And we're going to put a contact into the politicians to see what they have to say. And we're going to contact the relevant arms of the state who are responsible for that to see if they can go beyond that letter or what measures are being taken to try and address those issues. So we're going to park that there for now, but trust, we will be back at that early next week.